on the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes. Subject to driver availability. More terms apply.
Hello all, welcome to Up the Poshcast, the podcast made by the fans, for the fans. Grab yourself a drink, put your feet up and listen in. And by the way, there could be some strong language.
Welcome back, Posh fans. Peterborough United lost 5-1 away at Lincoln. And we're going to sum it up. I can't wait. Tonight I'm joined by Ashley, Lods, Charlie and me, Harry. I'm going to throw it to you, Charlie. Please dissect that game for me.
Ugh. In the words of John Coleman, I am rapidly falling out of love with football. Today was the low point of the season for me. It was just woeful from minute one, really. We were outworked in every department. It looked like, you know, if it was a boxing match, the referee would have called it quite early because they just looked stronger than us, more organised than us. They looked just had a lot more desire than us. I know that's a word that Fergie used in his post-match interview, was the idea of desire, and they had that in abundance compared to us, who showed up limp and willing to just go down without putting much of a fight, to be honest. I mean, there were some nice moments in the game. De Havilland's free kick was almost good, and Lindgren's assist for the goal was pretty impressive, but it was just another case of defending, being unable to do it. We were stabilised for a bit with the new players coming in against Exeter and Leyton Orient, but that looks to be very much gone now. We're back to same old Posh this season. I'm frustrated. Fergie's frustrated. Yeah, what an absolutely woeful day at the office.
Do you know what? I'm going to reach out to the players. We know that they listen. They maybe watch. I've got the squad list. Our average age is 22. That includes Jed Steer at 32, Sam Hughes at 27, and Teo Aden at 26. So let's say 21 is probably the average when you remove those three. Do you lot really fucking want a relegation on your fucking history, on your Wikipedia page? Because that's where this is going now. I am fully committed to the fact that ultimately we are fucked because you lot don't give a flying fuck about whether you are shit or not. Because I don't believe that you're shit, but the way that you're behaving and acting on a football pitch at the moment is absolutely fucking embarrassing. And quite frankly, if you don't buck your ideas up, I don't have the confidence and the faith in any of you to get us out of a relegation scrap. So you need to buck your ideas up now in the next two games and get 6 points on the board so that we don't have ourselves in the relegation battle. I can't comprehend what you've done today. I've said to people today was worse than Hillsborough for me. Absolutely gutless, spineless, baffling, players just doing stupid things. Seriously, guys, get a grip.
I'll add a little bit of constructive criticism to what Ash has just said. I noticed a few key problems that were our downfall. One was easily allowing ourselves to get stuck in overload positions, which, for example, in the first half, you would go from left back to centre back to centre back to right back. And CJ would then find himself with two men on him already because it was so obvious that we were going to pass out to the fullback on the next pass. There was almost never a forward ball along the floor to any midfielder from the centre backs during that game. And if there was an attempt, it went woefully inaccurate. That's one element of it, is predictability and a lack of incision, incisiveness coming out of the back, which is what the success last season was built on. You've got to be a bit braver and a bit quicker and also communicate better. What we'd none of us like to see is when one centre-back saying to the other, come closer to me, that other centre-back responding by stopping in his tracks to defy what he's just been told suddenly. Happened in the first half. It was fucking embarrassing to watch. And that we're only 1-0 down at that point. Aside from the predictability, the way in which we press and defend is ridiculously low quality. And there were moments, again in the first half, where I watched three players run at the same Lincoln player on the side of the pitch without any sense of the space they were leaving available behind them. One of them got megged and Lincoln were through for a chance. In fact, I'm pretty sure that ended up being the free kick that resulted in a second goal. And thirdly, when it comes to defending, the angle at which you position your body is absolutely critical for whether you're likely to be able to block it or you're going to give away a foul or going to get run past. Some of these players have completely forgotten about some basics of the mechanics of where your body needs to be when it comes to defending. And that is one of the reasons we are so easily caught out by any decent dribbling player. And Lincoln, was there a single Lincoln player today who we thought was an absolute championship quality, nailed on, great player? Or did they just do the basics right consistently? They didn't have to get out of second or third gear. And all these basic things, be a bit quicker and a bit less predictable. Defend as a unit and don't all run like headless chickens to one player. And position yourself better when you're defending. If you can just get some of these basics right, you won't be shipping five goals to a team that's struggling to be able to get more than one goal in the game for months.
Yeah, I mean, Ash wanted to speak to the players directly. I want to speak to one man directly. And that man's name is Paul Gerrard. Gerrard, I don't know how you say it. For those of you that don't know, he is the goalkeeper coach. And one of his primary responsibilities is teaching our players how to defend set pieces. And today we conceded from a free kick, a throw-in, two free kicks and a throw-in, although one was a direct free kick. But it was an absolute defensive shambles. I mean, I'm not going to go through the individuals at fault, even though I'm sure there were people that lost their men and whatever. But how are we not well drilled at this point in the season on how to defend a simple ball into the box from a throw-in? How are we not well drilled onto how to deal with a set piece? You know, who jumps in the wall, who tracks the men at the back post, who blocks it in case it comes back across the box? If that is Paul's job, that is his description, is to organise that and coordinate that. So either he is not getting the messages across to the players well, or we have assembled one of the most footballing brain inept squads of all time because they can't understand it. Because he's not asking us to do a really complicated zonal system anymore. That went out of the window after about five games of the season. It's as simple as tracking a man and blocking the ball if it comes near you. And our players are just completely unable to do that. So my message to Paul Gerrard is, you know, you stand up every time there's a defensive set piece and you stand there at the edge of the technical area with Fergie, and then you have to sort of slink back away into the technical box when they score from the following set piece. Start doing your job. Teach the players how to defend, because that's basically a game we've thrown away by not being able to do one of the most simple defensive actions in football.
Yeah, look, I totally agree with you, Charlie. And for some reason, I think that we still have this naivety that we just think that Manny Fernandez is going to win every single header from every single ball that goes into the box. We've seen it today. One ball, it goes over all the way to the back post. Why on earth is Malik Mothersill being asked to mark two players at the back post? Like, that just doesn't make any sense. The bloke's an attacker. He doesn't want to be defending at the best of times. Manny is not going to win every header that goes into the box, as is shown. And he's shown that positionally he's not the strongest as well again today. I just can't see how basic, like the throw-in, like you say, like to concede from a throw-in, and it wasn't like it was one of those like bullet throw-ins. It was just sort of drift floated in there, and then we've let it bounce in the box. We've discussed this time and time again that we're letting the ball bounce in our own box. Like, basics of football, how old are these guys? I know that we're saying that they're young, but I coach an under-14s team and I ask them just to get rid of it. Like, you're taught to, if the ball's in your box, that you get rid of it when you're 8 years old. Why are we still having to teach professional footballers that at 21, 22, 23? I don't get it anymore.
Yeah, and on a similar theme to that with the first goal, which I'm sure they'll watch back, when that ball comes in, literally every single player, except for the ones that were outside the box and remained outside the box, run to the goal line or run to in line where the header was. Not one player thought to keep themselves positioned on the penalty spot or in the outer half of the penalty box in case the ball gets pushed back in. You have this ridiculous screenshot where, as the ball is struck, you have three players to the right-hand side of Billow and a free man to shoot. And those three, because they're obviously all doing the same thing, one of them should absolutely be defending to the right-hand side of Billow. That's fine. But three of them doing the same thing means there is no communication among anybody, and we deserve for it to bounce off two of them in a ridiculous pinball and trickle into the goal. I don't think it was Billow's fault. And for what it's worth, before we get onto this, I don't think any of the goals today were Billow's fault. I think this was all just in front of him, an absolute just shambles, because there's clearly no communication whatsoever between anybody. And we need a leader in there. I think there might be one in Sam Hughes. But equally, some of these more sullen players need to actually listen to him. And when they're given an instruction, follow it, because they're not leading the charge.
Yeah, Fergie said in his interview, didn't he, about when Kieran Hayes gave away that penalty, he said no one's talking to him. And I don't really understand what he means by that. Does he want Kieran Hayes to be coached through in that moment? Or should Kieran Hayes just know that he just needs to play the ball back to Billow first time? Because it looks to me like he's trying to control it with a man pressing him from behind, which has obviously resulted in him fouling him because he had no other option. To be honest, I'm getting really, really bored of... I'm just repeating myself week after week, and I'm struggling to find something new to say when we discuss the game after a loss, because it is just the same things happening again. Like you say, the ball bouncing in the box and conceding from set pieces. I think the only thing I would say is regarding the way we set up for set pieces, yeah, we do make some stupid decisions like having Malik Mothersill marking two players at the back post, but it is purely effort in my eyes. I think you could get away with it. Like you said, Harry, there's two players just beyond the penalty spot, and that player is unmarked basically on the penalty spot, and the ball's just fallen straight to his feet. And neither of them players have been alert enough to react to that and go after the ball before it's got there. They're all just flat footed and watching it happen in front of them. And we keep seeing it again and again and again. And then you've got Manny Fernandez's body shape trying to block that shot. I think we've slowed down the replay, and it looks like it's come off of one leg and hit the other. And you want a player that's going to put his body on the line for things like that. If you know the shot's coming in, just throw yourself at it. And he's not. He's sort of just turned slightly, and you just wonder if he has thrown his body in front of it. There's three players in front of Billow. Billow's got no chance of getting to that shot because they're all blocking his view. And if I'm the goalkeeper there and I've got three players in front of me, I'm not expecting that ball to go in, especially when it's kicked directly down the middle of the goal. And then you've got the direct free kick they scored. And I think Billow might get a little bit of stick because of his positioning, but I think it was a well-hit free kick and it did go over the wall and hit at some pace. But again, if you slow that down, you've got one player in the wall that's jumped in Sam Hughes and three players that haven't. And probably the player that's the closest to heading that ball from the wall is Malik Mothersill. And if you watch, he just bows his head as the ball goes over him. And I mean, we got rid of Randall for similar things, right? Fergie was complaining about players not getting stuck in, and Randall ended up being the scapegoat, and rightly so, because he was the highest paid player and he definitely shouldn't be getting away with it being the highest paid player. But when you've got players like Malik Mothersill bowing their head in a wall on a free kick, like, something's got to give. And I think Fergie's absolutely right, just digging these players out in the interview now and throwing them under the bus and saying it is down to them, purely and entirely down to them.
Yeah, I mean, on Malik, Fergie said in his post-match that there are a couple of players that if they carry on acting the way they are, they're not going to have careers. And I don't wonder if one of them was not Malik Mothersill today, because I thought he was... It was the worst, his worst game in a Posh shirt, in my opinion. He obviously got hooked at halftime, but he was abysmal before that point. I thought Lincoln's number two probably had one of the most simple simple afternoons of his career, because he absolutely pocketed Malik with ease. And then obviously he bowed his head for the second goal. Just showed a bit of a lack of commitment. It felt like a little bit of a lack of devotion to the cause. And that's frustrating. And I know I'm always seeming like the one that criticises Malik Mothersill. I'm not afraid to criticise any player. And it did feel like it was the time to move on to individuals. But he was my lowest rated player today. I think there were very little redeeming factors in his performance. And it's nothing to do with his attitude today, really. I didn't think, you know, it's not an issue with that I have. I just thought he was particularly poor today and sort of summed up the whole performance.
Yeah, I've got a specific example on this as well, Charlie. I agree with you. He wasn't my lowest rated player, but just some football IQ moments, just putting yourself in the right position. The example being that Teo was trying to support him and go forward with him as much as possible. And at one point, Teo won the ball back on the edge of their third. And at that point, Malik was stood behind him. And what did Malik do? Just stood there. Didn't try and overlap and give Teo a perfectly good opportunity to play it down the wing. This is in the first half, right? I'm sure you guys remember it. Malik literally, as the ball's recovered by Teo extremely well, just stands there. Just stands there. Unbelievable. And we lost it not long after that. For what it's worth, even though the whole back line got a poor score from me, I actually want to say I thought Teo was strung up a bit by the lack of options in front of him all afternoon, and at least was trying things, even if they didn't come off.
Yeah, and it seems weird to sort of want to talk positively about somebody in the back line when you've conceded five goals, but I think we can relatively confidently say that Sam Hughes has gone in on all of the players in that dressing room today. I don't understand why it's taken somebody who is... I think that Sam Hughes is probably an expert in avoiding relegation. He's been at Burton for the last three seasons. He knows what it takes to keep yourself in League One, and ultimately he's the player that has got that experience. He is clearly the leader in the dressing room now. And it's just so disappointing that the people that we gave captaincies to, vice captaincies to, leadership groups to, if you include Joel Randall, they've all failed this season. They've been absolutely diabolical. Never when Archie Collins played last season did I think that he was going to get hooked at half time, whether that be through injury or whatever the reason. I don't think there was a reason given. He was probably hooked because he was shit today. Which I just completely did not think would ever be a position that we would find ourselves in with Archie Collins. How Kyprianou wasn't taken off the pitch today. He was shit today. He was shit midweek. Yes, he scored, which like maybe saved him a little bit. How the sponsors gave him man of the match in midweek is just absolutely baffling. I again, like Lod said earlier, I don't want to flog a dead horse, but he doesn't want to be here. Why are we trying to continue and maintain him? Because we had somebody come on at half time in Sissoko who, yes, look, it was the best of a bad bunch, but there's clearly some brightness from Sissoko, which is hopefully something that's going to help drag us out of the position that we're in.
Yeah, I'm getting really sick of Hector Kyprianou, if I'm being completely honest with you. And I wasn't on after the Orient game. I was really angry with him then as well. Really rubbish in possession that game. Admittedly, he probably was a lot better today, but just the body language of our so-called leader. And it's not just him. There's other so-called leaders on the pitch. Manny Fernandez constantly shaking his head whenever anything doesn't go wrong. You want your leaders on the pitch to be G'ing them up to make sure that they're you know, motivated still to carry on with the game. Don't have a go at them for something that's probably not even their fault. Like the deflected goal that I think it went down as a Kean Hayes own goal, Manny Fernandez and Bielo are having a little argument. And I've watched that goal back so many times that I cannot understand why Manny is blaming Bielo. I assume that's what's happened there, like going by the body language. And then you look at the end of the game and clapping the fans. And this isn't, I've said this before, this isn't something that really bothers me that much. But I know Malik Mothersill's got a lot of stick for not clapping the fans in recent weeks. And I've pointed out that Fergie very rarely comes out and claps the fans when we've lost the game. It's just what he does. But I stopped and I stayed back and I watched to see who came over and who clapped today after probably what is our worst defeat since Fergie's come back. And Cipriani came over. He was one of the first, admittedly, but he would clap probably about six times before walking off. Chris Conn-Clark was there for probably about 2 minutes, just standing, watching the fans clapping them. There was other players as well. Lindgren was there. Bielo was there. The main one for me was Carl Johnson, who was limping and a substitute. He'd come all the way over, limped over and clapped us. And you had players like Manny and Collins, who I'm a big advocate of, who would have just gone straight down the tunnel. They didn't even bother coming on the pitch. And Ashley's quite right. Why has it taken us this long to get the sort of leader that just understands like how to keep people on side and just know what to do in the right situation? Because honestly, players like Sam Hughes and Carl Johnson make the rest of the squad look like absolute idiots. Like, just it's just basic. Like, if you want to keep the fans on side, just come and clap them for about a minute. That's all you have to do. Like, even if it's not sincere, just make it seem like it's sincere at least. I mean, you've seen Malik Mothersill getting the stick he is because he hasn't been clapping fans. So, heck, the Cipriani is our captain and he's done it for about 5 seconds before walking off without a care in the world. And it happened at Wrexham as well, actually. The players had to come across the fans. So, obviously, naturally, they were clapping. And there was a nice moment where they were all clapping. You know, we played quite well at Wrexham, despite not winning. And Cipriani is just in the background having a chat with a Wrexham player whilst all the players are all stood in front of him clapping the fans. It's just, I just don't think it's very professional at all.
Yeah, do you know what? And I like to think that as a fan base, we're quite forgiving. Like, it never really feels like you have one of those, like, mega toxic moments. But I think that maybe the players are starting to take advantage of that and don't actually appreciate what it means to the fans. We know that they are looking to progress their career. I don't have an issue with that. That's what it means to play for Peterborough United. You are looking for your next move. But all that we ask when you are here is that you try your best. And I don't think that they're trying their best and actually show a little bit of appreciation. When I think about the start of the year now, that's what, our fourth away game that we've had so far? We've not won an away game since Newport. Like, these people are paying, and it's not about the money. Obviously, for some people, maybe it is, but I would never be one of those people that says, oh yeah, refund the fans. I don't think that's right. Like, if you've committed to going somewhere, then that's the decision that you've made. But these are people that are on what I would say is a healthy amount of money every week, and they're not giving the respect to the people that are giving their time, removing the money. They're giving their time to travel to Wrexham, to travel to Burton on New Year's Day, to travel to Everton on a Thursday night, to travel to Stockport on a Friday night before Christmas. I think that they need to start realising what it actually means to show some appreciation and not do it from the edge of the 18-yard box. Do it from maybe the 6-yard box, come a little bit closer and maybe take some of the grief and understand and listen. You've seen when somebody like, let's say, Ange Postecoglou at Bournemouth, I think it was this season, he was right over there. And I don't think that we would ever be in a position where the fans are just absolutely abusing the players, because like I said before, I think that we're a relatively understanding fan base. But at the moment, it just looks like they're all a bunch of cowards, unfortunately.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I mean, that's, you know, four away games, as you mentioned, Dash, four crowds of over 1,000 away fans, which for us is so impressive. You know, 1,100 at Burton, 1,200 at Wrexham, 3,000 at Everton on a Thursday night, and then it was sold out again today. And I don't know what more the fans can can really ask for it than a bit of appreciation. I'm unlike Glod. I do care. I do look when what players come over, and I know it's a token gesture when the players come over to applaud the fans, but it feels like it's quite important. I don't like that Fergie went straight down the tunnel today. I don't like it at all. It almost felt like it was him washing his hands with the situation, which to me doesn't bode well at all. I know it's something that he doesn't like to do, but I don't really care, to be honest with you. It's an away game. Their dugout was even closer to the away end. You walk, you applaud the fans, you hold your hands up maybe and apologise, because the fans did deserve an apology today. And then you can go and, you know, sulk down the tunnel. But I think the most disturbing thing for me was actually in the post-match when Fergie said that the fans, you know, the away end was half empty by the end of the game, and that the fans are just wasting their time at the moment. And I mean, you know, we've got Wigan at home on Tuesday night. That certainly doesn't serve as a great advert for me to go to Wigan at home. It's a bit bleak. And I think we need somebody to galvanise the fans. I mean, CJ is probably the best player we have at it right now. You know, before the game, he sort of ran into the Lincoln half a little bit and clapped the fans and sort of gave the away end a little rally. You know, even when you finish the warm-up before the game, just give the fans a little clap before you go in. Things like that, they can build a connection between you know, the players and the supporters. And the team last season did it a lot, but the team this season just... we haven't been doing it. And I think that's why there's such a big disconnect between the fans and a large number of the players in this squad, and why there's not really that bond between the supporters and this team, is because the players are making minimal efforts to create that bond, which is, you know, not only something that is very easy to do and something that they should do to appreciate the fans that are spending their hard-earned money, but also something that could probably help them in games as well.
I was going to have a little bit of positive. I'm still feeling good about Lindgren. I think he had a few runs that were missed today. He positioned himself well for receiving that ball that ended up in the goal. And he did extremely well for that goal. He absolutely skinned their outside centre-back. He looked up before deciding, do I shoot or do I pass? And granted, the ball to Ricky was behind him, and Ricky did a lovely flicked finish for it to go in. But fundamentally, he did everything right for that goal. And it was something that we desperately needed, with someone a little bit more of a fox to think about what is the best opportunity here to create something. Just such a shame that there was nothing else in the game other than RDH's free kick. I thought, I've not really had a chance to speak about Ricky much on the pod, and I've not been as impressed with his levels recently, but today he did run around for everything. I know he only had to do it for one half compared to two, but I thought that he did at least try and put himself in the way of things. It's a shame that his touch let him down more than once, and he managed to recover the ball right at the end on the right hand side of the pitch, and it bobbled off his shins out for a throw in. Disappointing, but at least the effort levels were there. And I'm trying to think what else. Yes, Sissoho. I actually gave him a pretty high score today. No one else really was with me on that. I gave him a 7.5. Might get pelters from that from people online when the ratings come out. But that performance that he put in, passing-wise, decisions-making-wise, intelligence-wise, would have been enough if everyone else was at that standard, in my opinion. The ball he sprayed out to Kean Hayes, which is pretty much his second or third touch of the game, was unbelievable. We should not underestimate how difficult that was to spot and how difficult it was to execute. It's a shame that Kean couldn't do more with it. So yeah, I'm feeling good about Lindgren and Sissoho at least. They are in their own way two new signings, right? Even if Sissoho's been here for a while. So they can make a difference as we proceed.
Yeah, the one thing I really like about Lindgren is how busy he looks. If you're going to compare him to Ricky J. Jones, it was very frustrating watching Ricky sometimes. Maybe not understanding how to beat the offside trap. There was often lots of space that he could run into, and where the midfield would get the ball, they're probably looking up at Ricky thinking, if I kick the ball in the space, you're making that. But for whatever reason, Ricky isn't alert to those situations. It feels like Lindgren is. He might not be as fast as Ricky, but he definitely looks like he's ready to pounce onto those through balls. And also he was dropping in deep a lot, which is good. And then, yeah, in regards to Sissoko, I was also very impressed. I just had a little rant about Kyprianou. I'd be more than happy to get rid of Kyprianou, give Carl Johnson the captaincy and get Sissoko in. And if him and Archie Collins are playing those balls forward to the likes of Kieran Hayes, Lindgren, and then Poku when he comes back in, I think our attacking force will be back in. It's just a shame that right now we've got Ricky still kicking around. My guess is that Fergie won't want to drop Kyprianou as he is the captain.
Yeah, I mean, Lindgren is really impressing me. It's just a shame he's not playing in a more cultured team. I could just imagine how good would Lindgren have been in last season's team. I think he would have been unbelievable with the service that he would have been getting from Ephraim Mason-Clark and Harrison Burrows. I think he would have scored, you know, potentially golden boot winning amount of goals. But yeah, he's looking like a big positive. And I agree on Sissoko. I didn't give him a very good score because I didn't think he was necessarily good, but I thought he definitely was an improvement on Archie Collins. And I guess that's just, you know, the story of the season. I mean, the fact that we've got a lone player from Man City who's played once for us, who's coming in and looking better than Archie Collins, who's meant to be probably our best player. You know, you look back at, I think it was Posh Unfiltered that Fergie was on, and he said that Archie Collins is a name that he doesn't even think about, and he just puts down on the team sheet because he knows to expect 7 out of 10 from him. And I mean, he's not getting that anymore. He's not getting anywhere near that from Archie Collins. His levels have completely dropped off. And I can't help but feel that if I was in Fergie's position, I would be seriously considering sending my resignation into Darren McAntony, because his players, the established orders, the players that were there last season, the players that are meant to be his dependable crew, have been letting him down time after time. And, you know, Fergie said he feels like he's wasting his time. And what else can he do? He also said that his goal was to keep us in the league, which is very exciting. I mean, I don't understand. Darren Ferguson is in such a difficult position. Does he stay? Is he above what's going on right now? Is he at fault? I really don't know. It's something that I keep going back and forth over.
Yeah, look, I don't think that I would ever be in a position where I don't want Darren Ferguson to be the Peterborough United manager. Like I've said previously before, I think that some things just click. And unfortunately, he is being let down week in, week out by the players on the pitch. I don't know whether we got too ahead of ourselves after two draws and thought, okay, well, Lincoln have only scored one goal in their last five. You know, they're not going to come and score a load against us. Well, they've absolutely battered us today, haven't they? On the scoreline and on the score sheet. I'm not so sure that they were dominant in a way, but the scoreline says 5-1, doesn't it? So that's all the history books will show. I think that we're at a point where maybe Fergie is starting to give up. And I did sort of chuckle at somebody that tweeted, can we bring in a loan manager to sort of see off the next 4 months? Because I think that Fergie is disappointed in himself, he's disappointed in his staff, but I do also think that he's massively disappointed in the players on the pitch and the squad. And again, we're seeing, like, and it's not just to blame injuries, but Katongo hamstring injury again. Carl Johnston's done a calf potentially today. Why are we having such rotten luck with our injuries again? And surely we're not basing our survival in this league on Kwame Poku coming back in. I would never be a Fergie outer, but if he was to choose to walk away, you know, I wouldn't have any shocks there, that's for sure.
I wouldn't say I'm Fergie out yet, but I probably am getting really close to it now. There is no doubt that the players are to blame. But as much as this recruitment policy is a Peterborough United thing, Darren Ferguson signed this off and he put his hands up and admitted that. And he's got it wrong, and he's admitted that he's got it wrong. And Darren McAntony's now given him some defenders because that's what he said he needed to turn this form around. And we've now conceded 5 goals. You can analyse the goals and decide who's at fault for them individually, if you like. But if you imagine that you're Darren McAntony and he's not used to seeing us this far down the table, and he's invested in players that Fergie supposedly wanted, he's then invested in more players that Fergie's wanted, and then Fergie goes and concedes 5 goals, I can see a world where Darren gets sick of this and sacks Fergie. And as much as I thought at the beginning of the season that Fergie would have enough and would eventually resign, I think in his interview today, it sounds like he's staying and he is actually genuinely looking forward to this challenge. Harry's banged this drum before about Ferguson being very much a promotion manager, not a relegation manager. And I think he knows that as well. He always jumps off the ship when it's about to sink. I think he's looked at this opportunity and he thought, I need this on my CV. I need to stop this ship from sinking because I don't want to have that reputation. So I think Fergie's going to stick around. I can't see him resigning, but I can see Darren McAntony getting sick of this before we get relegated. And I agree, before someone says it, I agree. If we get relegated, Darren Ferguson is the best manager to get us back up again. But I don't think we'll let him have that opportunity. I don't think we'll let Darren Ferguson get relegated and keep his job.
What Lods is referencing there is that I've said on here before, for anyone who hasn't heard me say it, that I believe Fergie's a manager who takes teams, the 7th best team in the league to 4th and the 4th best team in the league to 2nd, but takes the 16th best team in the league to 22nd because he overextends in both directions at the top and bottom of the table. And he's used to working with getting the best out of a good squad and making them great. And when he doesn't have good players, he can't use that skill set that he's got and get anything out of them. And they end up underperforming. Arguably happened to him at Doncaster, but he got them up again the next year. Despite the fact that I've said that, I absolutely, one, want Fergie to stay, and two, think he will stay, even if we go down. And I think that if we were in League Two with Fergie, I think that would actually be a fine reset for him, and he would absolutely get us back up again. And the way in which he is talking about it is a bit defiant. It's not saying this is all on me. I've got to dig us out of this trench. He's dig us out of this ditch, I should say. He's saying, I've got a good record. I deserve some leeway here. And I'm telling you, this is the softest group of players I've worked with. I don't think he says that if he's thinking of walking or if he's given up, genuinely. Because a really cynical view of it could be to say that he's covering his ass in case he does walk. And then he's got that quote saying that it was because the players were too soft. I think it is a last ditch attempt to try and get some kind of reaction out of those that need to have that reaction. I do think he got his tactics wrong today. A highly motivated, 3-4-3 today. Out of possession, Lincoln played a 5-1-4. They literally just man-marked our back four and then had either the midfielder or the closest wing-back also get involved in the press. And it worked almost every time. Fergie said that he had a plan that wasn't executed by the players. Honestly, from what I've always seen watching football, if you've got a team that's playing wing-backs that's better than you, you're actually better off playing 4-4-2 because then you have two strikers occupying their three centre-backs and they can't build out of it. But anyway, he has 20 years of experience and I'm just a podcaster. So while I wasn't that impressed with the tactics today, it's a moot point compared to the fact that I think he is definitely the man who we should have in the building. And there shouldn't be a moment's hesitation, even with the Twitter poll saying Fergie out and all that, which is starting to turn in below the 50-50. Keep your head while everyone around you is losing theirs. Darren Ferguson.
Yeah, I think it's exactly that. And it's one of those situations where I was surrounded by people saying things like Fergie out during the game. I think in the height of emotion. And then I was obviously with a lot of those people on the train on the way back, and I sort of just asked a question. Okay, so Fergie goes, who's your next Peterborough United man then? And none of them could think of anybody attainable that was better than Darren Ferguson for the job. And I think that's what we have to realise, is that, you know, in the long term, the only reason we'd ever sack Fergie is, or we'd want Fergie to go, is for the short term. If we felt that we were in imminent danger of relegation and we need one of those sort of results-based managers, you know, your sort of Sam Allardyce type manager to come in and try and keep you up in the tail end of the season. That's the only reason we'd ever, I feel like, plausibly need to sack Fergie. But actually, in the long term, sacking Dan Ferguson would be a terrible decision, because, and I guess one of the actual causes for optimism is the fact that Fergie's still here means he thinks next season we will go again, and next season we will have a good season, and we are going to keep this project going and improve it in the summer and really have a go next year. And I guess that is a cause for optimism. I think if Fergie saw the future as sort of bleak, and us being back to being sort of a mid-table League One club stuck in that rut like we were in sort of the Marcus Madison era, I guess he wouldn't be here. I think he still believes in this project. We always said when it started with this whole youth players, young and hungry thing, it was, you know, a 2 or 3 year project. We're entering the third year of the cycle next year, which is where we're really expecting it to bear fruit. Fergie still seems to believe in that, even though right now it's not very good. So yeah, I think the short term pain of maybe keeping Fergie, and as Harry says, letting him drag us from being, you know, the 15th best team in the league to the 20th best or something like that, the short term pain of that is a lot better. It is worth the long-term gain of keeping Darren Ferguson as Peterborough United manager, because I really don't think there is anyone better qualified for the job in the entire management world.
Do you know, Charlie, my only thing that I would say that I slightly disagree with there is that I don't want my football manager to be looking at next season. I need him to be looking at the here and the now and the game that comes up on Tuesday, where we absolutely desperately need something, some form of performance against a team that is a bogey team for Peterborough United. We have a terrible record against them recently. And unfortunately, from my side, I think it's another game where we don't get anything at all.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying, Ash. I really don't think we'll go down. I'm going to stand by this. I've never been scared of us getting relegated, because I think the four teams, arguably the five teams if we're including Cobblers below us and Bristol Rovers around us and Exeter, they're bad football teams, like bad football teams. And I know we're not great, but I don't see us being one of the four worst teams. And so I do sort of like the idea of looking into the future a bit. But yeah, I agree. Tuesday night is going to be, I mean, first of all, it's going to be an awful attendance, like terrible, because Wigan aren't going to bring a lot. And let's be honest, after today, not many of those posh fans that were in the away end today are going to be motivated to show up on a cold January night and support the team. So that's the first thing. And the second thing is, you know, Wigan, they're a tough team to face. We got absolutely hammered at their place earlier in the season, like embarrassed, and you can't help but fear that might happen again. I mean, they won today, they beat Bristol Rovers at home, or as we record it today anyway. They are a team that are very tricky. They've got very good players. You know, that Asgard has always lived in my memory after he absolutely tore us apart at London Road last season. I don't know how our defenders are going to be expected to deal with that. You know, they've got Ollie Norburn in the midfield, who's got a lot more grit and determination than any of our midfielders, making his return. Yeah, I think, listen, it's going to be a really tough one, and we have to get something from it. But we do have to look at the long term as well as just the short term.
Yeah, as Charlie's prefaced, Peterborough United now play Wigan at home on Tuesday night. We were pretty badly beaten when we went to their place. That was one of the first games, I believe, that George Nevitt played. It might have even been his debut. One of you can correct me. It was his debut. And it, funnily enough, we didn't mention Nevitt and his performance in the second half of the Lincoln game. I thought he was also all right and decent at the back. And it's probably, funnily enough, an interesting one if he does end up playing, because he's kicked on fairly well, I would say, since that Wigan game. And if he played again, I think he could probably do a more decent job at the back, because I'm personally ready to drop Manny. I'd have Nevitt and Hughes starting on Tuesday night.
Yeah, that would be my first choice. Would be get rid of Manny and bring a different centre back in. Fergie said that Wallin's had another break. I don't know how many breaks that guy needs, but it'd be good to see him in, because he has shown a bit of potential. I don't think Nevitt was overly bad, but he's still very raw. You can tell that. I'd argue that the goal from the throw-in was completely his fault because of his really poor header. Apart from that, bring in the natural number 10 in Chris Conn-Clarke. I've got no idea why he didn't start today. Ryan Havilland is not a number 10. Let's get him out of the squad. And if Sissoko's fit, get him in instead of Kyprianou. That would be my personal choice, but I don't think Fergie will do it. I actually don't think Fergie would drop Kyprianou or Collins. So you're potentially looking at Sissoko on the bench again, which is a shame. Malik Mothersill had a terrible game, but there isn't really a winger to replace him. I actually think we probably need an attacking player in the door. And I don't know if we're relying on some player sales still. I know Ricky still, there's some uncertainty there whether he's going or not. And I'm sure, even though the club haven't directly said it, I'm sure they're trying to get rid of Jed Steer. If one of them two goes, I think that we're going to get an attacking player in the door, purely just to cover this small gap where Pocky's still injured and where Odo is nowhere near the standard we thought he was going to be. We actually don't have any options when players like Malik Mothersill are out of form, which he clearly is at the moment, unless we're going to be playing Ricky on the wing, who is also out of form. We actually have no other option but to play Odo. And clearly Fergie's choosing to play the out-of-form players over playing Odo at the moment. So, we are stuck for options. Maybe he gives Odo a chance because he hasn't had as many. I'm pulling that face internally as well, actually. but getting Chris Conn-Clarke in, I think, is the most important thing with the attack on Tuesday night.
Obviously we've got a little chat box here and Charlie's saying it. I don't think that Abraham Odo has ever been in form. Will he ever be in form? Has he ever been good? I don't know what we saw when we signed him. He's trash. He's probably one of the worst. Put him in the Luke James category for all I care. The only thing that I sort of am concerned with George Nevitt is that we've had him in the door 6 months now. And obviously his build was an issue at the start, wasn't it? And that he got bullied a little bit. I'm a little bit concerned in his progression in that sense, in that he doesn't look like he's filled out again yet. And yes, we've got Sam Hughes is going to be our physical defender, but George Nevitt is slow. And that concerns me, is that, as we've seen today, I'm not going to say that he was at fault for that James Collins goal, but he just never really felt comfortable whilst he had somebody running at him, which is a concern for me. I personally think that it's Oscar Wallin that comes back in instead of George Nevitt. I think that if he's had this rest, Oscar Wallin provides all of the pace that you need for somebody next to Sam Hughes, who potentially doesn't have the pace. I think that then Hughes moves over to the left and couples up with Eden. And then you've then got Sam Johnston and Wallin on the right-hand side, which not many of us have been too complimentary for Oscar Wallin, but I think now is the time that Manny is sort of showing that he needs some time out of the team, so that he can have a mental break. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I'm not sure. I'm given where we are in the season, who do we see as a better prospect between Nevitt and Wallin? It's going to be Nevitt, right? I think we may as well give him as many minutes as possible. I also think it's difficult for players to bulk out during the season because the amount of effort and the diet you need to go on to be able to put on muscle is not conducive to you also doing huge amounts of cardio and the build up for games. It's the sort of thing you do in pre-season. So I'm sympathetic there. Also, don't forget, Ronnie was a slight, you know, pretty skinny player until he was probably 20 or 21. I think there's plenty of time for Nevitt here. moving on, I wonder whether there's the, if a just a completely different idea, given that Eden is a more attacking fullback, and if we're not playing CJ because he's injured, if Hayes will end up being on the right-hand side again, whether we play a diamond, and a true diamond, where it's four typically central midfielders with two of them with a bit more creativity, i.e. Collins, Kyprianou, RDH and Sissoko, with two up top in Lindgren and Ricky. Just it would be a fresh system with attacking fullbacks. But equally, I think it puts a bit less strain on all the individual midfielders, because it could be any one of the four getting involved in the defence or in the attacking, depending on where they are in the pitch. It just involves significant work from all of them in doing that, and whether they can gel like that as quickly as possible. You know, we've got like 2 days for that idea. I don't know.
Oh, I'm going to be honest, Harry. I can't think of much worse than going to a diamond. I mean, our midfielders have been so bad this season. Why would we want more of them on the pitch than we have to have? I don't think I've seen any quality from any of them in recent weeks that would want me to put them in. I think Sissoko should come in if he can. But honestly, I actually don't know why Chris Conn-Clarke didn't start the Lincoln game, and he should definitely start on Tuesday night. I mean, he didn't play against Exeter at all, didn't come on the pitch, so I was expecting him to be ready and raring to go. He didn't start away at Lincoln. He's got to start on Tuesday night. Surely Chris Conn-Clarke's got to start, because he's got to be fresh, he's got to be fit. Otherwise, he's got some serious fitness problems. I wouldn't go away from having a lot of wingers. I like our width. I think our best spells of the game today came in terms of when we were sort of getting players overlapping and committing bodies forward. You know, we had a decent spell around the sort of free kick and around the hitting the post of moving the ball and pinging it. I'd like to keep our width. I mean, Ado could come back in maybe. He's not very good, but he's probably, I mean, a normal Ado performance was better than Malik today. Kean Hayes, I'd like to see him pass the ball a bit more, but I think he's done enough to keep his spot. And then if Lindgren can play, he should, but it wouldn't surprise me if it ended up being Ricky or maybe even Bradley, if we need a bit of physicality, someone to sort of be able to hold the ball up a little bit and stop the onslaught of attacks that we're inevitably going to face again on Tuesday night. I'm fed up with discussing the team selection, because it feels like it's, you know, it's not who's going to be the best team, it's who's going to be the least bad team. But still, I mean, I wouldn't change away from the 4-2-3-1. I still think it's our best formation.
Do you know what, whilst we're really drilling down to the details, the one thing that I am going to moan about is the absolute state of our halftime warm-up. The players just do not take this seriously, and I think that sort of just runs through to the core. They go out, and I watched Chris Conn-Clarke and Will Blackmore ping a ball to each other from 40 yards away, and Will Blackmore's like taking a touch with like the back of his heel from behind his leg. Like, if you're meant to be warming up, now, Blackmore's, that's maybe a little bit harsh, but if you're meant to be warming up and getting yourself ready for the second half, can we at least look like we're trying rather than just pissing about? Like, Otto and Dobby, bloody just mucking around in the middle of the pitch, kicking the ball at each other from 2 yards away. I this goes back to what I said at the start. I actually don't think that they realise how serious this is at the moment and how fucking shit we are. And, you know, where are they going? Like, what are they doing? Like, do they have the passion? Do they have the desire? I'm really not sure they do. And they show it just at the basics in the halftime, in the halftime warm-ups that they do. And, you know, that's just a complete bugbear of mine, especially after today.
All right. I think we're there. It's time for predictions for Tuesday night. Ash, I'll come to you first.
We're going to lose 3-0. That's a relatively solid prediction. Somebody's posted a list of our fixtures for the rest of the season. I don't think we're going to get double-digit points on the table at the moment, and I'm very much now resigned after today to the fact that we get relegated. So, yeah, we'll lose 3-0.
I don't think the rot is quite done yet. I think also it's just not a lot of time to prepare for a game that is going to be difficult against a team that, although they're not that high at the table, we always struggle against. And they find ways of getting through us. I think we lose 2-1 is what I'm going with.
I can't believe I'm doing this, but I'm going to be positive. I think Fergie will get the reaction that he's asked from his players. We seem to be a lot more laid back on a Tuesday night. I don't know what it is, like a mentality thing. And Wigan aren't that good, are they? They're not as good as some of the other teams that we've played recently and come a lot closer to getting a result from. I'm going to say we're going to win 2-1. I think it will be close, but I'm going to be positive and predict a win. The win has to be coming soon. We've gone way too long without getting one. So I think Tuesday night will be the one.
Wigan are just everything that we're not. They're a professional outfit. They haven't got a massive amount of quality. They've got a few really good players, but they're just a team that run for their manager, that are well organised and they'll stay up comfortably and be comfortably mid-table because of that. I think they'll come to London Road buoyed by a good win against Bristol Rovers, and I think they'll probably beat us. I don't think we'll score again. I just don't see us having the attacking quality other than Gustav to really make a difference on the game. And I think Wigan will be relatively unscathed and they'll win 4-0, which is, you know, a negative prediction, but honestly, I don't know when we're going to win a game again. I've had all the optimism sucked out of me by this team. I was told today that after the game by a posh fan that if I was trying to be optimistic again on the podcast this week, that they'd be turning off as soon as I did it. So there we go. There's some pessimism for you, whoever that was. It's 4-0 Wigan.
Yeah, so as we can see, Charlie gives into the baying crowds. But it is what it is. He's still young. All right. Thank you, everyone. Thank you for listening. And up the Poshcast. See you on the next one.
Up the Poshcast.
See you on the next one.
Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Up the Poshcast. Let us know your feedback. Give us any ideas for topics you would like to discuss or any questions you'd like us to answer. Up the Poshcast.
I'm fucking sick of this bullshit. Why did we decide to do it in our worst fucking season?